Everybody, this is the Friday Filibuster. I am David Johnson, joined by Mac McIntyre, newly returned. Newly returned from where?
From Boston, where I was last week at an art show.
An art show. Fantastic. Did you get a gigantic print to hang above your bed, perhaps? A boudoir print, perhaps?
it's a long story, and it's probably best left mysterious for our listeners, but I got a bucket.
You got a bucket, all right?
I got a bucket.
Nice. We will let that sit out there. And then Eric Escherslager.
Hi, it's me.
Fresh off of laying a brick pathway.
I can move now and get up from a seated position without too much trouble. At least no more trouble than usual.
Good. Nice. So,
we've been busy today. What have you been up to?
Man. I know, you guys are accomplishing a lot more than I feel. I drained the oil out of my truck.
That's good. Did you remember to put more in?
No, because I need to repair the oil pan, because I'm going to try to sell the truck, which is kind of a big deal. I'm kind of lamenting its part.
Sorry.
But yeah, it's all right. It served me well. So what are you going to do?
Can we expect a kind of an in memoriam montage at the end of the episode, perhaps set to Green Day's Time of Your Life or whatever that song's called?
That's true. I probably should. I think it's mandated for any kind of anything you say goodbye to needs to be set to that. But
is there another song that kind of is the go-to? That's the one that pops into my head.
What's the song from the Verve Pipe, and I can't remember what it was. I remember that being used a lot.
That's pretty good, yeah. I mean, I guess if you went back even further, it might be like, it's so hard to say goodbye to yesterday, whatever goes to end.
That's very good. Boy, nothing brings a cash crashing down like
that. I know.
All right, so let's get right to it, Mac. Why don't you fill us in these last couple weeks?
For months now, I've been hearing everybody just go on and on and on about this show, Breaking Bad. And people can just keep saying how great it is.
Yes.
So I finally sat down with the Netflix and I put it on and decided to see Breaking Bad for myself. And it really is every bit as good as everybody's been saying.
Excellent.
Really
have you caught up completely?
I'm in the middle of season 3. So
good stuff.
Yeah, it is. It's really good stuff.
So the question is, are you going to be able to restrain yourself from watching it when it's airing in real time? How are you going to do that? How are you
I don't know, because I'm just right now I'm just like marathoning through the whole thing in one big sitting, and to have it go, you know, weekly, and then each season's only, 12 episodes? So, the long waits between new episodes, that'll be rough.
All right.
Well, you can get as far as – you can get all the way through season 4 on Netflix, so you're good till then. And then they're airing the first – whatever they're calling the first half of season 5 right now. For the next, I think, 4 weeks, and then we all have to wait until next year. So,
all right. Well, I'm good company. But the show's really great. Vince Gilligan, who used to work on the X-Files, is the showrunner.
I didn't get that connection. That's good.
And so he's like super talented, and just the casting and the plots they come up with, and I mean just everything about the show. It's like so good, it's scary.
Very good. Anything else happening?
I don't know. I guess that's it.
All right.
Just that and, art and rock shows in Boston.
And the bucket, yeah. I'll have to.
And the bucket.
That's amazing.
Did you get it from a man from Nantucket?
Sadly, no.
Okay.
Eric, how are you?
Some old news, perhaps?
Let's get some.
Let's get some. I watched a few movies, movies that I've seen before, but it's been a long time. And they're all actually movies that have pretty significant plot twists in them. So it was sort of interesting both to revisit these, very good movies on the one hand, and also watch them with kind of some of the foreknowledge, obviously, of what was going to happen. Because of all the, Christopher Nolan stuff going on, I requested from the library, the great library system, The Prestige, because I hadn't seen that. I think I'd only seen it once a long time ago. And that movie is still great. Surprise. even knowing what's going to happen. And that's a movie that really relies on, a lot of twists. And
it's like five flashbacks simultaneously. Like, if you really think about it, the story's being told, you know, like.
Yeah. I mean, it really is kind of one reveal after another leading up to the big ones at the end.
Yeah.
Which were the ones that I remember. There was a lot of stuff, kind of a lot of little plot stuff I didn't remember, so that was nice. But even knowing where it's going, I think it's very entertaining and fascinating movie to watch because of the way that Nolan sets up and foreshadows and kind of leaves little clues all throughout the movie. It's definitely a movie that is it's probably his I think most I don't know is efficient's the wrong word, but I mean it's probably the most kind of airtight of all of his movies. And also I think the one where it has kind of the most interesting character work probably of any of his movies, just because, you really get to know these few characters, and kind of emotional character stuff is not always his strong suit, but I think it really comes through in Prestige. So it was a lot of fun. I was very happy to go back and watch that and be reminded of how good it was.
There you go. All right.
I also watched L.A. Confidential. I picked it up cheap on Blu-ray, I think, last year sometime. Never had a chance to sit down and watch it. And I said, let's watch this. And, Dave, I know this is a movie near and dear to your heart.
Yeah, it's one of my all-timers.
Yeah, we watched that in college, I remember. And again, like, I knew, like, the big, twist or whatever. Mm-hmm. But there was a lot of stuff I didn't remember. And, I think that's a movie, I think, of the three movies that I watched that kind of fall into this category of being kind of twisty movies. This is probably, I think, the one that I like the best, just because, it relies so heavily on character work and on just really, really well, well drawn, well acted characters and dialogue that's compelling to watch.
And the culmination of their stories are extraordinarily satisfying.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, everything.
Especially Exley's and
absolutely.
What's his face? Yeah, so Crow and
Bud White. Yeah.
Yeah, Bud White. Yeah, like so. I mean. That still stands out as when those guys decided to spoiler alert, but whatever. When those guys decided to kind of band together to work the case, and I just remember like being thrilled by it. Just watch because that was a movie. Saw in the theater. I had no idea what to expect. It was one of those things. You have no clue what to expect. So it was so much more so satisfying to see how that all came together at the end.
Yeah, really. I mean, it's really all comes out of the characters and their motivations and who they are. It's not just because some screenwriter said, this is what you're going to do now. I get the only thing in the movie that sort of rang a little hollow for me, and it may just have been because some stuff was cut out from the book, is the interaction between Exley and Kim Basinger's character at the point late in the movie when they kind of drives the plot from that point onward.
So the question is why she would engage in that behavior?
Yeah, it's just, I don't know, or even why, I mean, I guess it's just,
Like why she said, are you talking about like why she told Bud
she thought
she was helping? Well, because she knew that the pictures were being taken. So she was doing
maybe it's more Exley. I mean, maybe he's just that driven and that competitive.
Okay.
Or maybe he's just a jerk. I don't know. I'm not sure why. Or maybe, he's just a guy.
She turned on the seduction, right? She turned those charms on.
There wasn't a whole lot of seduction. It was more just like, let's go. But.
All right.
A minor thing. I mean, sorry. Very quickly, last one. I rewatched 12 Monkeys, which I hadn't seen in a long time.
Yeah. I really got some work done.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, that's a great movie. I enjoyed it. I think probably the least of those three, if I'm going to compare those three for the random reason that I'm watching this week. But yeah, I like the world building stuff is cool, and I had actually forgotten like the big twist at the end, so that was fun. But
that was a nasty little surprise too. I thought
that was cool.
For me, I saw Total Recall, the remake there.
Really?
Yep. So, pretty disposable, haven't thought about it since I left, but while watching it, thought it was pretty interesting. Maybe not even, it wasn't interesting actually, it was pretty straightforward, but, it was loud and there's some cool moments. I mean, there's a pretty much mindless kind of summer blockbuster, but it was effective in that role. just obviously comparing it to Total Recall, you know, the other Total Recall is kind of a trap because they're really different, you know, completely. Although I was surprised, it's a PG-13 movie, and they did the full-on triple-breasted hooker exposure. So I'm guessing three breasts don't count as full front, as frontal nudity. So take that for what you will. But, you know, it's a Len Wiseman movie. It's slick. You can track the action. It's noisy, and there's not much depth to it. So that's my review of Total Recall. Colin Farrell, he's never quite stuck, has he? Like, he's done some good supporting stuff, right? I mean, I remember in Minority Report, he was being kind of heralded as the next big thing, but has Colin Farrell really done anything to really drive a movie himself? I don't think so.
I know who he is, but I'm trying to think of any big movie.
Alexander, probably.
Okay.
Yeah. But I mean, that was not, you know.
He's one of these studio stars where the studios are holding up this guy and saying, this is a movie star. You will go see his movies, you know.
Oh, kind of like a Ryan Reynolds kind of situation.
Yeah, Sam Worthington. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Sam Worthington is an excellent example.
That's a good example. That's probably the best example.
That is.
You would.
Yes. Yeah, I'd like a movie like comprised of all of these studio stars. You know, Jonah Hill, Russell Brand, Sam Worthington star. You know? Okay, I'm supposed to watch these people. So anyway, yeah, so Total Recall, kind of bland, pretty noisy.
I guess there's not much else to watch right now.
That's a good review. So let's move on to stuff we are watching by manner of our employ. So Mac, what do you have cooking on the docket?
Yeah, to review on for the site here, I was very fortunate and very lucky to receive season 6 of Dexter.
Ah, good, yes.
And really great. As per tradition, I watched the entire thing on a Saturday. And
What'd you think of this season?
It was interesting.
What did you think of the big twist, without getting spoilery?
Big twist in the middle. It was a good one.
I thought it was a stinger. Yeah,
excellent. I didn't see it coming.
Me neither. And that's like
apparently
really hard to do that. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's good that you guys did. Apparently, when the series aired, that twist was kind of figured out by a lot of people.
I think Eric called us stupid.
I didn't call you stupid. Well, okay, if anything, Dave, I called you stupid because you were watching it like when it was on.
I got you.
You had time between episodes to think about it. Mac was just marathoning it, so you know, there's barely time to, you know.
Fair enough. That's
right. Yeah, because you know, I was marathoning Breaking Bad, and then I had to stop Breaking Bad and put on Dexter, and that's kind of an interesting mental switching of the gears between those two.
So overall, where does the season kind of rank for you in the?
Well, this season they try some sort of experimental stuff. They bring religion into the picture.
Yeah.
And Dexter, Dexter doesn't really find religion because, you know, he's Dexter, but he questions religion. And
there is a religious character who's actually a pretty good character, I thought. And it's like – and you're always kind of expecting the other boot to drop, right? And I thought that was – you know, they kind of resisted that, which I thought was kind of – would have been a cheap out, so –
yeah, the question isn't, you know, Dexter doesn't look at religion as how it will affect him. It's
right.
Like,
yeah.
Dexter knows who he is, and he knows he doesn't want to change or can't change. Instead, he questions whether, you know, the darkness in someone else can be lifted, because he knows he's stuck with his own darkness, and he's okay with that. So he turns it on to others and, you know, can't.
Well, specifically his, you know, his son, you know, for sure.
Right.
Though I don't know, I think
but other
I think,
characters throughout the season as well.
I think he still nurses. I think at the end of the last season, it seems like he nurses hope that he can emerge from that. I mean, I thought that, you know, the whole Lumen storyline. So I don't know. Maybe I didn't see that door. Maybe it's not. You know, maybe he's not teaching. He's not going to be teaching Sunday school, and that's his way out.
Right.
But,
exactly.
You know, I think that he's left that door open. I thought that that's what the previous season was about. So
it's sort of like that's his like being stuck on the island on Gilligan's Island. There's always like they're always teased that it's going to happen, but you know it's never going to happen.
Right.
Yeah. This season seemed like the one where these subplots were most annoying and trivial, and anything that wasn't Dexter was just terrible.
Really?
Because I thought it was the Quinn stuff especially just annoyed me to no end.
I thought this season they did a better job with the subplots.
Oh, I didn't like anyone who wasn't Dexter or immediately in his circle.
Yeah, Deb got really interesting. She was promoted to lieutenant and became everyone else's boss. So you have a character being put in a leadership position for the first time. That always makes for some interesting drama.
And what did you think about the culmination of her arc, the controversial...
Yeah, well, that's a big question mark. We're going to have to see where it goes in future seasons.
Were you okay with that?
I am, you know.
Okay.
I mean, with what happened with, what's her name, Rita, in previous seasons, I thought, oh, the show's never going to overcome that hurdle. And it did. And so, who knows? I have faith in the writers. I think, I'm curious to see where they'll go.
That's fair. I think I've become jaded with the show for whatever reason. It's kind of like what happened to me with 24 after a period of time where it's just like I kept watching, but it was just diminishing returns.
Yeah, I can kind of see how this season might be a turnoff for some longtime fans because it's so different. The stakes aren't as personal. So it's kind of good and bad, but I still say that the series as a whole has been good across the board, and I did really enjoy this season. They tried something different. Maybe it won't work for some people. It worked for me, but I think they should be applauded for trying something different. And now they've set themselves up for taking even more risks in the next season.
And they also have an end point. They know, I think it's two more seasons and they're done. So.
Oh, did they?
Yeah, I think so.
Interesting.
All right, Eric, how about you?
Speaking of TV, show that I like a lot, Community Season 3.
Oh, nice.
Which actually
Although I do wonder, you know, you do not find Community delivering diminishing returns as that went on?
No, not at all. Not even a little bit. Going in season, there are some amazing episodes in season three. I watched, just today, I watched the Foosball and Glee episodes back to back, and they were just, it was just like, this is just amazing. I don't know, we all have our, like, shows that we just latch onto, and they just tickle us just the right way. And not in a bad way. But, I mean, Community is it for me. Like, it's just so endlessly clever and funny. And I get new stuff out of it every time. And it's been the case the first two seasons, reviewing it as well, that when I sit down and just kind of marathon through the episodes on DVD, I enjoy it even more. Like, even if I've seen an episode a couple times, when it was on and then just kind of in reruns or in streaming, it's so much fun to go and just watch them all in a row, and they hold up so well. That even some of the episodes that are, I guess, technically weaker because they're not as strong as, like, the, alternate timeline episode or like I said, that the Glee episode or some of the later episodes, they're still really good. And I'm still, like, seeing things I never saw before. Like, in that Foosball episode, you know, there's a whole subplot with Abed as Batman trying to track down who broke his... You know, the non-existent, fictional Dark Knight special edition DVD. And I'd never noticed it before, but like when he's being Batman, they totally use Hans Zimmer's score in the background or a really nifty approximation that was just a little detail I did not notice the first time. It's a show of details and of layers and of things that I don't notice. So, yeah.
Each episode is so packed with so much just, you know, information, details. It really lends itself to rewatchability.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, I can see why other people aren't as completely crazy about it. Actually, I can't see that, but I will accept that other people aren't as crazy about it as I am. But to me, it's just the height of comedic sitcom-ery. But anyway, so I'll probably say I liked it in my review. The one thing that's interesting about the set, and I have to go back and double check the previous sets, but I thought in the last couple sets, Dan Harmon did a lot of the commentaries, and I was sort of afraid that they were going to really strip down this third season because of everything that happened at the end of the retooling and Dan Harmon getting let go. But they have commentaries on every episode, although Dan Harmon only does, I don't know, maybe six or eight of them, which is still pretty good. Although listening to them, you definitely can tell that they recorded it before the axe fell. So you kind of every once in a while hear him say something about what they're going to do in season four, and there's just sort of a little pang, thinking about what might have been, but.
All right. Very good. So.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry.
I like you.
Let's see. Well, big news for me. Red Scorpion. Finally got
a hold of
Red Scorpion. This has been on my clamoring for list for a while. It was one of those impossible movies to track down. You know, the VHS is running $90 on Amazon or something ridiculous. So it's like, ah, Red Scorpion, Dolph Lundgren, Soviet killing machine, 80s, you know, late 80s R-rated action. Can it be awesome? So I finally have it, and it was a little disappointing, unfortunately. Pretty straightforward. Guy infiltrates indigenous group of people, goes native, and turns his giant shotgun at his former comrades. You know, but those former comrades were Soviet, you know, dirty Soviets versus, you know, like, I don't know, former military guys from Avatar or something. So I guess you roll with that. So I don't know. There's a pretty good action. Some odd musical choices for some of them. Exploding helicopters and whatnot. And Dolph Lundgren essentially turning in another slab of rock performance, but what are you going to do? So, like, it really is, like, he literally goes out in the middle of the desert with, like, an African tribe leader or even, like, a shaman or something, and he, like, looks at a scorpion, and he kind of takes on the scorpion's mannerisms and goes on a vision quest, and then he just suits up and blows things sky high. One piece of one noteworthy aspect is the effects. The gore effects are done by Tom Savini, so they got a true master at that. And the final bad guy death isn't bad. So spoiler: he chops the main bad guy's arm off while still holding a grenade. And then the last scene is the guy's trying to get to his severed arm, and the grenade goes off and blows him sky high. So that's not too bad. But overall, it just doesn't quite stick it for me. Although I did like the grammatically nonsensical tagline. They think they control him. Think again. Like, I don't know who that tagline is directed to. I don't know who the subject of that is. So anyway, Red Scorpion, Synapse did the Blu-ray. They did a great job with it. A ton of extras, including a very cool Dolph Lundgren retrospective, which gets a lot of Masters of the Universe screen time. I believe that is coming out on Blu-ray soon. So, that's a known quantity, and I'm ready to embrace that in all its Octode Rectifier glory. So, all right, moving along.
Oh, wait, that's all you want to talk about?
Nah, let's not talk about the raid.
All right.
Yeah, I don't want to.
Is it still smarts?
It's not a great feeling. Not a great feeling.
Okay.
Raid.
You don't even want to warn people? I mean, I guess I'll still read your review, but I don't know.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I guess you twisted my arm enough there. So Raid, obviously, the movie I've been waiting forever for, finally showed up. And to my, like, shocking disappointment, it's a pathetic Blu-ray treatment. The video quality is sub-standard definition. Like, it looks like it's streaming from Nova Scotia or something. It's murky brown, soft details, which sucks because this movie pops, and it's such, you know, it depends on this great visual treatment because there's so much action to digest. You need a clear view of it. And even more disappointing in some ways is the audio, which is kind of out of whack and tinny and low key. And this is, again, a score that is driving and harsh and really fits the action. So, I mean, the movie itself is fantastic, but it's aided so much by the AV experience. And for Sony to drop the ball on this release is quite a travesty. Oh. I mean, the whole thing just feels kind of low budget. Even the pop-up menu, which I don't expect great things of, but it's just like, it looks like something some kid did in his AV class in high school, you know, like Arial block font. It's just a disappointment, and I'm saddened deeply by it. I honestly think that the digital copy looks better. So it comes with a copy, I think it actually looks better. My quick matchup, but
Well, Dave, thank you for sharing.
I had to come out. I had to deal with it. I had to deal with it in public. So you're right.
Yeah. Now you can pass the sharing stick over to Mac.
So be aware. So that's true. Just beware. Be on the.
Yeah. I saw the movie weeks ago at the Brattle Theater in Cambridge, and it played really well in front of the crowd. Everybody was really into it.
Absolutely. It's a movie I was going to start building weekends around to get friends over here to watch it, but I'm like, it still has to be seen, and I encourage people to watch it, but just a huge missed opportunity. I'm still, like, befuddled by it.
Well, hold out hope for the special edition, I guess.
I don't know. I guess so. Dark Knight doesn't have a special edition. I'm not sure if The Raid will. So We'll see.
Red Scorpion got one.
Double dip. Yeah, Red Scorpion got it. You're right. So maybe we'll pray for the double dip. All right, Mac. Onward and upward.
All right. We're going to take a look at what's coming out next week on DVD and Blu-ray. We're going to go to DVDverdict.com. Click on the upcoming DVD releases tab. And from there, we're going to scroll down to the cover art gallery for August 14th. Just hit that link, and we're going to talk about whatever we see on the list here. And some stuff we've already talked about. There's Community, there's Dexter, and there's The Raid.
Raid, there you go.
Yeah, a lot of stuff.
With the big Jaws Blu-ray release, which is apparently very good. This is the Spielberg win and supervise the whole thing, and it's supposed to be pretty awesome. What's it, Juan of the Dead?
I do remember hearing about that.
Okay.
But that's... I don't know anything else. I do like that Community cover art. That is pretty funny.
I do. The box art in general is pretty cool. They all in the you know, when you open up the DVD, it's a transparent case.
Yeah.
And all in the background, they have photos and little quotes, and it's, you know, all kind of looks like a yearbook type.
Yeah.
Stuff.
Speaking of befuddling, it's right. I never know why it never comes out on Blu-ray.
I think at this point, it never will.
Damn the DVD. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it looks pretty good on DVD.
That's good.
And that's right next to it is something called Community College.
Yeah, it's the prequel.
Definitely.
Is that the
Dean Young Pelton? Pierce.
I think Starburns is in the background there.
Yeah. Yeah. It's how Leonard something. All the old people on the show.
I mean, you know, bring up the Raid Redemption on DVD. It'd be an interesting, you know, maybe it does look better on DVD. Who knows? That's...
So the Blu-ray did not come with the DVD.
It did not. That and a digital copy. So, you know, I can't believe I'm saying that. That maybe the DVD is the preferred one. But
you know, it was weird. This is, you know, getting into audio visual talk time. I recently reviewed The Lorax on Blu-ray, which looked good, but it came with two standard definition bonus Dr. Seuss shorts. One of them is a Butter Battle Book, which I remember seeing. It was made for TNT, I think, back in the late 80s. And on Blu-ray, it was just a jaggy mess. Yeah. I don't know if it's just the way the interlaced video was kind of put on there, but like the DVD looked way better.
Hmm.
And it was just this weird thing. So
there you go. Maybe that's the hope we all hold in our heart.
It's all part of the big move back to
standard. 10 movie man cave action. Looking through that.
Yeah. Got some Jackie Chan in there.
Yeah, some Jackie Chan, but.
Well, that'd be good if you ever had a man cave in. stuck there for a long time. You got 10
movies.
True. That's
ten
a
movies.
Long time, you know?
That's good.
You hide under your leather lazy boy and watch it.
Well, I will add an audible of something I did watch recently that I like. Little old news on my end. Just occurred to me for some reason. Tangled, which is a fun little movie.
Oh, yeah, that is a good movie.
A little family movie. So.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that.
We've also got the Royal Tenenbaums Criterion on Blu-ray.
Is that new? That's all new?
It's a new
track.
Yeah, the Blu-ray release is new. If it's at all like the Rushmore Blu-ray, which I reviewed a while back, it's identical in content to the DVD, except the picture is way better. Like it was a real step up with the Blu-ray, so okay. I'm excited about that.
All right, well, let's end of early season on a DVD release of the week. Eric, what about you got?
I'm going to go with Bigfoot because you know what they say about guys with big feet.
There you go. Bam. Another Bigfoot movie.
There are
a lot of Bigfoot movies. Yeah, look at that. That's pretty insane.
It's a beast. Those helicopters.
Does it really necessitate attack choppers? I don't know. It never struck me as kind of just a shy, shy woods going animal, not someone demanding heat-seeking missiles being fired upon him.
Basically a hippie no one's ever been able to take a picture
of. Pretty much. Mac?
How about Sophie and Sheba?
I just think of the cat food.
I don't know, Dave. That's still pretty sexy.
All right, I'll go with Leave It on the Floor. Okay, moving on. Ambush Topics, you know how this works. Eric, why don't you kick us off, because I haven't thought of one yet. Go.
Okay, all right. Bad parenting.
Mm. How about the opening scenes of 300 where they're just tossing the malformed babies off the cliff? That's not a great example of parenting.
Not really. I don't know.
Yeah.
I did not read that in What to Expect When You're Expecting.
That's right.
Let's see. How about Carrie White's mother in the movie Carrie?
That's not very good.
She had some sort of misguided ideas, perhaps.
Mine, this is really just an excuse to talk about a movie that I actually wrote an entire post about for this movie, but I still want to talk about it. It was a random Netflix viewing. I was just looking around Netflix looking for something to watch and happened upon this bizarre cover for like a 70s horror exploitation type movie called The Baby.
The what was it?
It's called The Baby.
The Baby, all right.
I'd never heard of it before. It is about a social worker who gets involved with a family. It's like this really like domineering, overprotective, kind of psychotic mother. These two like sisters that are, I don't know if there's stuff wrong with them. And then this her son, who is an adult, but who can't walk or talk or speak. He wears diapers and lives in a, and spends all his time in a crib. He treats him like a baby. He's a baby, except he's an adult. It is nice. Very disturbing. And nice. The whole thing, there's a lot of, it goes kind of crazy at certain points. There's a weird like birthday party for this baby that is basically just like a 70s freak fest. It's a bizarre movie.
Yeesh.
And it just kind of all, it all kind of, it's, everyone needs to watch it, but I don't recommend it to anyone. It's, anyway, The Baby. Yeah, it's weird. It's a disturbing movie.
So actually,
please watch it.
Average reminder, Sleepaway Camp, Angela's mom.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That's,
there are a lot of bad parents in horror movies. I mean, I guess you could argue whether Jason's mom in Friday the 13th was, you know, acting in her son's interests or not. I mean, she's certainly trying to, you know, take revenge on the people who let him drown.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think.
Oh, this is an age where there were no IEPs, so we do examples. Okay, I'll go next because I just thought of one. Assault with garden implements.
Mm-hmm. Oh, of course. In Peter Jackson's Dead Alive, the guy rebuilds the lawnmower into like this whirling wheel of death thing and goes storming into the house full of the living dead and starts chopping them all up in this huge blood fest. One of many huge blood fests.
One of many. But the culmination, for sure.
Yes.
Like an astonishing amount. That's probably the correct answer, Matt. So.
boy, I'm trying to. Unfortunately, it's been a while since I've seen Shaun of the Dead, but I know there's a scene that takes place in like a back garden type area. Does he kill a zombie with a rake or a spade or something?
He does. I think. Yeah, I know what you're thinking, and I can't quite pinpoint it, but your answer is accepted for sure. Because
okay, and if I'm wrong, everyone tell me.
I mean, through most of the movie, he has the cricket bat, but I don't know if it's in that scene or
that
not.
That could be. Well, a cricket bat could be used for garden purposes. It's for chasing away crickets that might be eating your tomatoes.
That's right.
Or tomatoes. Sorry, it's British.
I'm gonna go with a rake. Death by rake. That's my initial reaction. Right. We'll see.
All right.
For me, it would be in The Exorcist 3, the big jump scare featuring the pruning shears.
Oh, yeah.
That's good.
One of my all-time favorites. Yeah, a rather mediocre movie, but punctuated by some, you know, a handful of just unparalleled weird, freaky jump scenes. So, well, that's not even, I'm not even sure if that one's scarier than the crazy old lady climbing on the ceiling. That's pretty messed up, too. Yeah.
The great one about the shears is that there's a jump scare like 5 minutes before that. That you jump, and then you think, oh, okay, it's over. Then the shears happen. You're like, oh, my God.
But then the genius comes in. It's just a static shot for like 2 minutes. You know? No sound, and you know something terrible is coming. And it's not even like, I mean, it's not like blood and gut. It's just, it's weird and.
No, they leave it up to your imagination.
Yeah, it totally is. Yeah, it's very odd. So, very insidious humor. Okay, Mac, wrap us up.
Okay, I've been playing Lego Batman 2 on the Xbox. And these Lego games are like so addictive. I know they're not hardcore gaming, Dave, but anyway, I still enjoy them. And they've done a ton of these. They've done Lego Indiana Jones, Lego Star Wars, Lego Pirates of the Caribbean, Lego Harry Potter, Lego Rockstar. I think that's all of them. So what are some unlikely choices for movie or TV franchises to be turned into a Lego game?
What was that, Lego Halloween?
Okay.
Lego Michael Myers and Lego Jamie Lee Curtis. And Lego everyone else. Donald Pleasance would be Lego. Lego topless teen, I assume. I, you know, whatever. I don't know what would be in that movie.
And I was going to say Lego Full House, but that actually sounds pretty cool to me. So.
You could explore the house. You could, you know, you could help Uncle Joey find the jackalope. That was a thing, right?
I don't know. I got the whole series.
What was the puppet? Was it like a beaver or something?
Oh, yeah, you're right. It was a woodchuck.
Woodchuck. Okay.
Yeah. Wasn't there a famous skydiving episode? Like somebody went skydiving when they were supposed to be somewhere else?
Sure, they landed somewhere in Walt Disney World.
Supposed to be taken. They landed on stage with the Beach Boys.
That's right. That's how all those. Towards the end, every episode ended that way. how writers, we can't quite finish this episode. Yeah, I got a great idea.
It's too bad because I would rather have seen that happen at the end of like MacGyver. He was just like always ending up with the Beach Boys somehow. I don't know why.
My other guess would be I don't see how this works at all, but Lego Life Goes On. I don't think that would work in any possible way.
Was Wilford Brimley on that show? Or am I thinking of?
You're thinking of Our House.
Our House. Oh, right.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Oh, yeah. Shows that I didn't actually ever watch, but I think I've never my family watched.
I can't imagine what on earth the game would be. What's there to explore? What would the characters do? What would they build out of the Legos?
For what?
They probably understand how life goes on by building Legos.
I'm sorry, but there's no way you can do a Lego Corky without just offending half the
people. I don't know. I mean, they all have the same head. That's the thing. Everybody
there's no way you're doing it. That's not going to get the ACLU on your ass, so. All right, Mac.
All right. Well, you mentioned MacGyver. MacGyver would be perfect. He builds things out of
nothing. He would be a perfect.
That would be amazing.
Now for mine, I went with Die Hard.
Die Hard.
Yeah, because, you know, you've got the whole building to explore, and you're all about breaking things and putting them back together. And so you've got your little Lego John McClane who's moving up the floors, taking out guys one by one.
A little Lego Reginald Bell Johnson. That'd be
good. That's right. Yeah.
Lego donut.
Lego donut.
The little Lego pieces, like they're glass on the floor, he has to walk across.
You have to jump over them, yeah.
Lego Agent Johnson. Yeah, that's good. How do you capture the full extent of the Euro trash involved in Die Hard in a Lego form, you know?
Lego, there's like a lot of Lego ponytails, right?
That's true.
Actually, yeah, pretty much everything we've talked about, with the exception of Life Goes On and whatever I said, it sounds like it'd be a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's true.
Lego MacGyver and Lego Die Hard?
Yeah, that's good stuff.
It'd be amazing.
It would be. Yeah. All right.
How about we just extend Full House? Let's do Lego TGIF.
Oh, nice.
You know, speaking of which, I was thinking of Step by Step. You remember that one? Remember that show?
I didn't watch that.
Did that ever get released? I think it released like a few episodes.
I'm sure it did. Yeah.
I just remember like the guy from Kickboxer was in other episodes where he would like stand up to bullies and like use his karate on them. I thought that was pretty good.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. I should have watched that show.
Yeah, there you go. Once in a while. So, who else is on TGIF? Quick. Family Matters.
Perfect Strangers.
Ooh, Perfect Strangers. Full House was on TGIF, right?
Yeah. What was that? I'm trying to remember what the classic lineup was. Because, like, Family Matters was a spinoff of Perfect Strangers. Maybe it came at the same time, because Perfect Strangers was probably on a different night.
Part of me feels like Perfect Strangers predated TGIF.
I think it did.
It was on Wednesdays for a long time.
I'm pretty sure Full House was, like, their flagship there.
That makes sense.
Was Sister Sister? Was that a TGIF? Oh,
that was late. It was later. Was Just the 10 of Us part of TGIF?
Yeah, not bad. Let's see him.
I think that predates it.
Well, that was because that was a spinoff of Growing Pains because of that coach.
Hmm.
I basically just remember that they had the coach, and they were occasionally visited by, like, a priest who drank beer.
Okay, I found it.
I don't remember much. Okay, what do you got?
Give me a – so when do you think – what was in the – wheelhouse of our TGIF
days. We're 90s? Trying to figure that out. Yeah, probably.
Okay, so 91, 92. So actually, Perfect Strangers was in fact part of TGIF. So done. Okay. Just the 10 of Us as well. Late 80s. Okay. Mr. Belvedere.
Really? That was a TGIF show.
That was a TGIF show. Then once you got kind of into the early to mid 90s, Family Matters, of course, Step by Step. Dinosaurs. Remember Dinosaurs?
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Not the mama.
Yeah, that's right. A bunch of crap I don't recognize. Baby Talk.
Who don't know that one?
I don't know. It looks like that 9 o'clock to 10 o'clock block was always in flux. I mean,
yeah, that was
Family
really...
Matters held its own. Step by Step was it? Boy Meets World kind of came on.
Boy, hey, that was late. Oh yeah, Mr. Cooper. Sure.
Hey, Muppets Tonight in 1995-96.
That was a good show.
So I don't know. All right, boy. All right.
So Halloween, that was my answer.
That's good. All right. Well, I think any talk of dinosaurs and Billy is a good sign that we're done. So thanks, Eric. Thanks, Mac. That is it for the Friday Filibuster. Thank you for tuning in. Have a great weekend. Mac, take us away.
See you at the party, Richter.